Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Everybody, and welcome to this spoiler review for X-Men 97 episode 8, Tolerance is Extinction part 1. We've got so much to discuss here on the
Geek Buddies.
So here we go. This is the one we've been looking forward to. It's been teased. Bo DeMeo has sent us 700 episodes to watch of X-Men the Animated Series to prep us for this stuff. Of course, this is borrowed from comic books, from the comic book storyline as well. But this is X-Men 97, Bo DeMeo's approach to this, directed by Chase Conley. What an episode to start off this three-part run here to, I think, finish out season one. You know, as if the other episodes didn't stuff or were chock full of stuff, every episode, this one shoved in so many things here. Bastion's plan coming into full fruition here. Seeing how human sentinels have been born for quite some time, waiting to be triggered. Finding out that Cooper there is part of this whole plan initially with Bastion and Sinister. Cable coming back, having daddy issues and father and son issues going on. Jean Grey trying to still reconcile her stuff with Madeline Pryor. Nightcrawler dropping some pearls of wisdom, human wisdom on us, ironically. And you've got Sunspot and Jubilee doing their thing with Sunspot's mom here. So there's so much that leads to this finale with Charles showing back up, Magneto being right, and essentially EMPing the Earth to kill the mutants, but also send the humans back into the Stone Age technologically. So, Michael, your overall thoughts on this just opening episode with two more to go for this storyline?
I mean, this is the opening episode. We got two more to go.
It's just what I said. Yes.
I'm exhausted. No, it's great. I think it's Bastion's mom who says to Gene, Scott, and Cable at one point that when they see Bastion, 16-year-old Bastion's drawing of mutants and Omega Sentinels, she says that the best art imitates life. Yeah. And I think, look, we're going to talk about all the nerdy shit. We're going to talk about the cameos. We're going to talk about some of the epic action scenes in this episode. But my biggest takeaway from this is this show has a lot to fucking say. And if you're not paying attention, like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it is hitting on America post 9/11. It is hitting on Black Lives Matter. It is hitting on things that are going on right now with the way that the world is dealing with Israel and Palestine. Like, it is dealing with humanity's fear of AI. It is dealing with absolutely everything. And pulling in the Holocaust in a way that that X-Men has always referenced because of Magneto's origin, but really just, I mean, Val Cooper's speech at the end, like, everything that Val Cooper says in this episode, everything that Bastion says about his plan in this episode, this isn't just a muscly purple villain monologuing. I mean, yeah. This is a guy talking about some heavy stuff, and it's like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just the world we've been living in for the past several years, where we feel like we're just jumping from one crazy thing to another crazy thing. But the philosophy, the ideas, and the real life parallels that they are drawing in these animated episodes is really hitting hard for me. I mean, in the way that a really good comic book story is supposed to do. And then on top of that, they are giving us some mutant action, the likes of which we've barely seen in the movies. I mean, we saw some stuff in this episode, and we've said this from episode one, but I mean, seeing these mutants really go for it, particularly Magneto going at the end of this episode and going, let me show you what I can really do. It's just from top to bottom, this was a great episode. And to end the episode with Magneto and Professor X being back on the board and knowing that we have two other full episodes to go, I mean, where this thing is going to go is going to get wild.
Yeah, Shannon, Michael alludes to the messaging here, certainly dealing with the collective trauma, certainly the idea of apathy, the idea of so many of these things happening that we just become apathetic to it. And it's essentially saying, like, people still need to understand this stuff is important. You can't just ignore it. Commentary about humans and mutants coexisting, but not in the way that Charles had envisioned 300 years in the future. Mutants, the ones that are still alive, are slaves to the humans and all of that. But then we also have stuff going on in the present day with all these characters and their own personal issues. And Trish ends up being like one of these human sentinels, adding a whole nother level to the Trish beast situation. So what did you think overall on this and where it led to with Magneto showing his power, as Michael said, but also Charles showing up here saying, oh, I hope I'm not too late, X-Men to me. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, along with the spectacle, that was awesome. And again, knowing that there are two more episodes of this arc, you know, they have set the bar really, really high. I mean, watching Logan and Kurt, you know, double team all the, you know, the Manchurian Sentinels, watching Nightcrawler use three swords because of his tail, like that stuff. That's just gravy. All that is icing. Like, that is just so much fun to see. And watching Logan have the opportunity in animation, which granted that, you know, they're human sort of, but watching him be able to dismember multiple ones as he's falling to the ground, like really getting to see what Wolverine can do. But also the larger things that are being addressed, the apathy was the big one for me as they're talking about, like, hey, you know, when you don't have skin in the game, it's very easy for the next thing to come. You forget, you know, you have a short memory about these terrible things that happen. This is when you have really good writers crafting a really well-told story, because the larger things that they do touch on, they don't feel forced. They feel perfectly in sync with the narrative that the characters are going through. I mean, I think easily this is my favorite episode of the season thus far. And knowing that this is just sort of the opening shot, I have very high hopes for where the next two are going to go.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think this is my favorite episode as well, because as Michael pointed out, the commentary, you guys know, I pick up on that social commentary, whether it's there or not, sometimes in these situations.
I mean, but I wasn't going to say it, but I'm glad you said it.
And I do. But, you know, most of the time I'm right. And I'm certainly right here. I mean, this is so effective in the messaging, right? So like all good films and TV shows that work on the surface, like, you don't have to go bone deep and see the messaging that's going on to enjoy the episode. You don't. Like, Get Out is a great horror film. You don't need to read the social commentary that's going on there about how we treat how white people treat black people and what have you. You don't have to explore it, but it's there if you want to. And certainly this episode works without you needing to go too bone deep. There's a villain. The villain is trying to convert humans who don't know they're being converted into these things, essentially becoming mutants themselves, ironically becoming the thing they hate in order to rule. So they, because it's born out of their fear of being irrelevant or made irrelevant, which is every human's fear, and especially nowadays with AI. So it works on that. But if you go deeper, as Mike was alluding to, some of these causes, some of these things, I mean, the fact that he uses it's all for a greater cause, the fact that Bastion, you know, great again, the fact that Bastion says, hey, is it tolerance or is it guilt, right? He's taking these shots all around the arguments that we've been having online, on social media, in our world, in our country as well, about this idea of acceptance and is it real? And by the end, it's Magneto going, F this. And even Cooper saying Magneto is right, which is a hell of a turn to see Cooper go on in her arc. So much going on here, but still the smaller stories of a father and son, of a mother trying to figure out where she fits in all of this, if she's even the mom. And of course, a son being ashamed to be a mutant because his mom hates mutants. So there's so much here that is still working along with the strong, powerful messaging underneath that makes this so, so good. So let's deal with the Bastion situation here. He unleashes an army of Prime Sentinels. We finally get the full plan here. We find that he's the one that, you know, used Cooper to put that video out there showing that Charles' death has, quote unquote, been faked. And she's been working with Bastion and Sinister. Bastion's taking care of business here. We find out his past with his mom. We find out that he's been essentially groomed to be this thing in order to bring about this future with humanity. And we see Doom. We see Zemo. We see another woman there. I don't know who that is. But essentially, he has been charged with the top villains, and he's putting his plan in motion, which, of course, leads to Magneto being there at the end using his power. So what do you think about how they handled Bastion and his storyline here throughout this episode, Mike, and what he did?
It was great. I mean, you know, like they've done with other storylines, they kind of took a very complicated comic book origin and got rid of the edges a little bit. So in the comics, you know, there's the Siege Perilous. There's a bunch of things that led to the birth of Bastion. And this was sort of taking what we've seen in X-Men 97. As John referenced, there's a lot of, I don't know that there's a ton. There's maybe like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 episodes that Bo DeMeo has said you should check out. but one of them deals with a Nimrod that gets destroyed in about the time period that Bastion's dad probably would have gotten Bastion's mom pregnant. So when Nimrod, the Sentinel from the future, gets destroyed, he kind of gets destroyed like the T-1000 in the Terminator movies, in the animated series. So he kind of like turns into a bunch of liquid metal, can reform. And so it looks like a piece of that crawled away and crawled in a poor janitor's ear. And there we go. And then Bastion growing up with that Sentinel in him could hear different electronics, different kind of machines, and heard the Master Mold. And that sort of gave birth to this version of Bastion. Yeah. So kind of nice, clear cut, got what's going on, really good to go. And then, yeah, like I think realizing and people, you know, all across YouTube and Twitter and everywhere on the internet have been pointing out that Bastion has been present in pretty much every episode since the beginning. In the very first episode in Jean's Vision, she sees a kid drawing a picture, which we have learned in this episode is the picture that young Bastion was drawing. We've seen him in photos with Forge. We've seen him in meetings at the UN. So Bastion's been ever present throughout this. And the whole idea that he's been sort of behind the scenes, manipulating things, moving things around. And even last week's episode, which I think we talked about, when Mr. Sinister is like, you're an idiot, you shouldn't have done things this way. And he's like, you assholes have been fighting the X-Men since 92 and you haven't done shit. So I'm going to do it my way. And his way is hiding in the shadows and working with sympathetic humans in the United Nations, working with Dr. Doom, working with
rational Benzino, humans.
Working with rational humans, and laying out a plan that says, hey, these mutants are going to be a problem in the future and we need to do something about it. And there's a cold calculation to the way that he's doing everything that's pretty chilling. And in addition to that, I found it really interesting that he kind of says in this episode that Henry Gyrich assassinating Professor X, which we now obviously all know didn't really happen, but didn't really work the way that he thought it did, thanks to the Shi'ar. But Henry Gyrich's assassination of Professor X actually made people sympathetic. And the Martin Luther King Jr. Sort of analogy here is pretty clear that, you know, people feel a certain way about a different group of people, a leader who is preaching peaceful coexistence is assassinated. And all of a sudden that changes a lot of people's opinions. whether that be guilt, whether that be tolerance. I think this episode sort of lays that out, and that was actually doing a lot to make people happy about mutants. But I thought the part that he really hit the nail on the head with here, and Bo DeMeo has talked about 9/11 a lot on Twitter as his inspiration, that the reason he did Genosha is because that is so big that people can't wrap their heads around it. And that's when we become apathetic. And honestly, having lived through a couple of the things that we've lived through in the past 10, 15, 20 years, you can sort of see how that really is accurate. That like certain things for all of us as people become so big, become so huge that we don't know how to handle it, and we sort of tune out. So his plan of turning a bunch of people into killer robots is awesome in comic book terms. And to Shannon's point, it allows us to do a lot of slicing and dicing and have some really epically awesome action sequences in this episode. So his plan of taking disaffected people who have been talking about mutants in chat rooms and turning them into killer robots works great. But really, as I said before, his laying out his reasonings for doing it and how he did it are so close to what we are currently living in a lot of ways. I think is what makes Bastion a cut above the rest as far as villains go and villain arcs. You know, we talk about it a lot, whether it be Thanos or Loki or Yellowjacket or pick your villain in an MCU movie. Yeah. And some of the villains we love because of their motivations, and some were like, okay, you wanted power, you wanted control, you wanted this. That seems a little whatever. Bastion's plan is a scary plan because it's a little too real. Killer robot aside.
Well, I mean, and using people's disaffected feelings about the world, using people's fears, humanity's fear of being left behind, right? This idea, we always hear about this idea. People get so scared of, oh, this point of view or this political move. If this takes hold, it's going to, you know, it's going to leave us behind. And so what do? I can dip you in this vat, or I can give you these ideas. And if you become this part, I can have you triggered to do a certain thing, right? I mean, it's so obvious to me, the commentary he's making. If you take your anger and I give you this idea, this theology, this philosophy, and you embrace this philosophy, then you will eventually rule. We will win, you know. And this idea of taking people's fears, natural fears, and abusing them. And when Cooper calls him out, he says, oh, I omitted certain details, but the general thing. And so basically lying to these people about what they're signing up to do, taking advantage of their ignorance and their anger in those moments to turn them into these human sentinels, I think is an interesting element here to throw into his villainy.
I'm going to tell you what, when Dr. Doom says he doesn't like how everything went down and he didn't know it was going to go that way, and you tell Dr. Doom you'll send a memo next time, you got some balls.
Yeah, you got stones for sure.
Hey, Dr. Doom, I'll send a memo.
Shit. Your thoughts on the Bastion storyline here and what you take away from it in essence, and what you think it's setting up here.
Well, I mean, in terms of, you know, character, I mean, you guys, you both already kind of hit the nail on the head. But, you know, I just want to kind of highlight the performance of Theo James this. You know, and for those of our, you know, audience who are unfamiliar with Theo James, he was one of the male leads in Divergent. He was in the second season of White Lotus. He's currently on The Gentlemen Netflix. Personally, aside from being a James Franco doppelganger, I think he would be a fantastic Bruce Wayne for the new Gunn DC universe. Ooh, but his delivery is so, as Vogel already put, cold, calculating, and chilling, but also so relaxed and so measured. And I think that's one of the things when Mr. Sinister was first introduced in X-Men 97, very much a throwback to that 90s X-Men animated series where your bad guys are so broad and they are so over the top. He's got the sharp teeth. And granted, this is from the comics as well. He's got the sharp teeth. His voice is way down here. Whereas Bastion comes in and he's talking to you like a counselor would. He's talking to you like a neighbor would. Everything sounds, to use a word you all both already used, everything sounds so rational because of the way he delivers those lines. Like he's not twirling a mustache. He's saying, hey, this is a problem that we have. Here's a solution I have come up with. And that to me makes the most frightening villains, the ones who can almost put you at ease with the sound of their voice, despite the content of what they're saying. So Theo James, I think, is doing a fantastic job in this. And yeah, I mean, I know we'll get to the action in a minute, but the moment that Cable, Gene, and Scott walked into that house and saw that old lady, I was like, this isn't turning out right.
I do think also really quick on the Bastion plan. I mean, one of the things I really loved is we've seen from Days of Future Past on, we're very used to, 300 years from now, we're in some post-apocalyptic garbage world where everybody is fighting and mutants are almost extinct and everyone's dead and everything's on fire. Like, whether it's Terminator or X-Men, we're used to that. The scarier version is, the future's great.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's a utopia that's built on the backs of mutants. We just make them do everything for us, and we're having a great time. Like, that's scarier than, fighting for our survival.
Of course, because there's a hypocrisy inherent in it, right? And this is the thing at the end, when you look at it, and that's what I think was so powerful when you saw that vision of the future, because it's like, well, humans, out of their fear of becoming extinct, subjugated other subjugated mutants so that they could stay alive. So in essence, they were fine with it as long as they were the ones subjugating others. If they were going to be subjugated, that's what they were upset about. So that's what I find. There's a hypocrisy in that point of view that I think is so essential to point out. And the show did a wonderful job of doing that. But there are some human elements here too, Shannon. What did you think of these human moments? We have we have Cyclops and Cable going at it, occasional father-son moments, which they come together near the end of the episode and show them that the Summers, you don't mess with the Summers. Gene having a little bit of thing there, trying to break them up and get them to work together as well. But then you have Blindspot and Jubilee and what's going on with his mom. And then you have Trish, Toby, and Beast. And then later on, Cooper lets Magneto go. So talk to me about the human relationships throughout this episode with these situations. What do you think about how they handled it? And did they advance it effectively for you to buy into these storylines?
I mean, Scott is very much in a no-win scenario. I mean,
dramatically,
the rancor that Cable has, you know, obviously you would understand it. Like, I'm not, you know, overly inclined to have this, you know, father-son reunion with you. You know, that my mom is gone. And Scott also such a lame-o. I mean, I'm glad that they're leaning into that because that is a, like, I think probably one of the challenges of like an old 80s series, like when I think about like Duke in G.I. Joe, Duke is like, Duke's the leader. What else about him? Blonde. I mean, the fact that they're leaning into Scott's he's kind of a dork. Like he is an incredible leader. Like he is very, very good at this. He's better when he can lean on Professor X, but he is a good leader. But socially, yeah, he is a little awkward. And to watch him try to have these moments with Cable, you do feel bad for him. But yeah, the moment that his action movie one-liner, like, let's show him what happens when they mess with the Summers, like, dad, you dork. Just really, really great moments. I also really liked the Jean Grey.
Let's do some good. Yeah.
Let's do some good. Elliot Ness, full but I also love the Kurt and Jean, like the brief scene that we got with Kurt and Jean, where you see Jean is starting to understand, like, again, Madeline also in a no-win scenario. She's just like, the fact that she has Madeline's memories, she should have reached out. She's like, you know what? I was probably not as helpful as I could have been. The way when she tells Nightcrawler to call her Jean, when he calls her Miss Gray, like, call me Jean. He's like, yeah, Madeline liked to be called by her first name too. Like, that's just, those are great little character moments that you're able to do in just a couple of lines that do make them so resonant with the audience. It does make you, aside from the spectacle, I mean, it does, that really makes you feel for the characters. Sunspot and Jubilee, yeah, that was great. I really enjoyed their moment, especially when they crash land in the ball. Across the board, I thought all of the human stuff, this is not what they were, but all of the soapy moments, I thought all of the soapy moments were really, really nice. And Again, I'm excited to talk about the action, but I'll wait.
I'll swing back to you on that one. Yeah, Michael, your thoughts on the human storylines and the relationships that were established even further in this episode.
Well, I gotta disagree with Shannon on Scott Summers.
What?
Scott Summers, like this show,
he's such a dork.
Okay, let me rephrase. Sure, Scott Summers is a dork when it comes to emotions and trying to express it, but not in the dude. Like, I think what Scott Summers has suffered from a lot, particularly in the movies and in some other forms of content, is people do kind of put him in that Duke from G.I. Joe category of, okay, like he's cool. He's got like laser beams, but he's kind of a dork and he's kind of dumb. And there's not much else to him aside from he's the leader. And I think this show has done the absolute opposite with Scott Summers and has shown that they really, really do understand him. I mean, he's on this journey where he keeps leaning on the what would Professor X do? What would Professor X do? Dude, Professor X left and he's coming back in the 11th hour. Like, Scott Summers is on a journey to figure out who he is as a leader, as a person, like what he really believes. And I think they're doing a really nice, nuanced job with that. I mean, they did an amazing job in those first couple episodes balancing that. You do have a stick up your butt. You're Scott Summers, but holy shit, you're a good leader. Holy shit, look what you can do. And then him and Jean and Madeline going on their whole journey, like, dude's been through the fucking ringer. And so now to end up with your son there and going, well, this is really awkward, and kind of going through this whole thing where at the end, I didn't think that his, oh, let's sew these toasters what we can do was a cheesy line. I was like, look, this is how this family bonds. Like, this is it. Like, this is not a family that's going to be like, let's have like some kind of like big sit down emotional moment. Like, when you see, I know we're going to talk about the action in a minute, but like when you see Gene telekinetically driving the car, Cable grabbing his dad's hand, pulling him up so that he can shoot a fucking hole in a cave while he takes out Prime Sentinels, and then they all land like the fucking father and son and the Holy Spirit. That's pretty awesome. Don't tell me Scott Summers is a dork. So I thought all that was really, really well done, and not like, and to Shannon's point, even though these are like the quote unquote soapy elements, the character elements, it didn't feel soapy. It didn't feel like they, you know, like the biggest joke in the world to me. Right. And look, I love The Matrix. Don't come for me in the comments. But from the very first moment I saw The Matrix in the theaters to now, there's that moment where Agent Smith is coming to get them and Trinity takes a beat to have a 5-minute conversation about telling Neo she's always been in love with him. And you're like, okay, get in the phone. Come on, get in the phone. And they didn't do that. They just had it really nice laid out. Like, you went from these three people are estranged to these three people just did something fucking awesome. And it works as far as that arc. So I'm a big fan of what they're doing with Scott Summers. And I don't even care that his license plate said Slim. I think it was awesome.
And of course he has a Porsche.
Go ahead. And then I thought, you know, like Madeline, you know, doing the whole Madeline Goblin Queen thing in episode 3 and then having her die in Genosha, you're like, oh man, we just lost it. But I think they've done a nice job of really using Madeline and the loss of Madeline to try to really build this story as far as Jean and Cable and what's going on with them. And Cable's entire motivation of like, I want to save my mom. Like, it's all really, really nicely done. And to Shannon's point, it's done with a minimum of writing. They're not like hitting it on the head. They're not like, but it's just like, it's kind of laid out really nicely. And I thought that scene with Kurt and Gene was just lovely on every level. I mean, it was lovely seeing Gene struggle with, I have all these memories now that are not my memories. Yeah. I know these are Madeline's memories, so I don't know how to feel. And Kurt being like, you feel how you feel. Like, family is family. Like, and then really using his relationship with Rogue and the fact that Mystique is his mom and that he had a shitty mom, kind of to lay out this whole sort of message, which any LGBTQ person really responds to, particularly people whose families turned them away, which is blood is blood, family is family. You get to choose your family. Which the X-Men is a chosen family at the end of the day. I mean, that's what's made them work for so long, is that they are the ultimate chosen family. It's why we love them. So that was all really, really well done. And then the Sunspot Jubilee stuff, we got to see Jubilee in her comics accurate outfit, which fun for every nerd out there. And we got to see Sunspot finally fully power up, which was also really cool. But yeah, I mean, the whole balance, and we talked about this last week, the whole balance of Roberto's mom going, I like mutants. I feel bad for them. I feel bad for mutants. Right. You know, it's what Bastion said. It's the tolerance is a little bit guilt. So yeah. I feel bad for mutants. I don't really want to deal with mutants. I'm gonna have a fundraiser. I'm gonna raise a bunch of money for Genosha. But when my son comes into the literally crashes the party and is revealed to be a mutant, and two fucking robot people fly in and say, "Oh no, no, we're not attacking them. We're here to save them. They should come with us." And you know, when your mom looks at you and says, "Oh, you should go with the police. You should go with the police. This is probably fine." It's like, this is uncomfortable. Really well done. And so like, I just think that across the board, I mean, we've talked a lot about how every one of these episodes just packs so much in. So you have all of this social commentary, but the social commentary didn't take away from the soapy character moments for all of these characters, which also didn't take away from the fact that we had epic action in 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I liked the emotional beats here. They're necessary because the action is important. The commentary is important, but without the emotional beats of these characters and us investing in them because of these emotional beats, the show wouldn't work. So I love that they have that. And yes, the Jean Grey stuff was great. Families of Choice was great. Bernardo's mom closing the doors on them was a symbolic thing to have that. That's not an accident for them to include that in the episode, which I thought was really powerful. And Cooper's speech to Magneto, I thought was really powerful as well. And then Cooper's speech afterwards to Bastion, I thought was really strong. She was sucked into this idea of wanting to help them because she was afraid. She didn't know that they were going to go that far. And now that they have gone that far, her act of defiance is to let Magneto go. And then she gives that speech about the idea of apathy and the idea of these big things happening. And we can't just turn our brains off. We have to be aware. And you're right, Mike, to bring up earlier, we are watching this episode as college campuses are inflamed with battles with police involved and people on both sides of this conflict involved going at each other. And it is a time now with so much unrest. So the show couldn't have come at a more topical time in our world, and how many of us are really paying attention to that, and how many of us are not wanting to engage because it's all too much. So I love that the show addresses that. Yes, go ahead.
The sad part is this show could have come out any time in the past 10 years and we would have been like, we need this show now more than ever.
Fair point.
It hasn't stopped. But yes, you are absolutely right.
For centuries, you're right.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Shannon, let's go back to the action now. You want to talk about it? Take the floor. What do you think of the action sequences here? Wolverine, Nightcrawler, the battles later on in the episode. What do you think of all this stuff going on here in the action?
I mean, the Wolverine Nightcrawler scene was just fantastic. Again, because they are not totally human, getting Logan getting the opportunity to slice and dice was a lot of fun. And when he says, you know, lady, I got six reasons, and from the, you know, you get that gunslinger shot from behind where a head hits the ground and you see a sword, and Nightcrawler reminds him, no, we've got nine. So watching that 360 shot, I mean, something that the movies did do really well, and granted, this was back in 2003 when X2 came out, was the action of Nightcrawler, like getting to see how cool it is, like what an effective fighter he is. The amount of incredible moments that there are in that movie that are Nightcrawler centric. I think the animated series is doing him justice right now. The best one being, because I know we're running out of time, the best one being as Logan stabs a sentinel, as Nightcrawler bamps him, and you see what Nightcrawler experiences when he is teleporting. And even though they don't, I mean, seeing Logan's face like this,
that was cool.
I mean, that was the coolest, most fun thing to watch. And as they, you know, teleport to the outside of the mansion where everything's on fire, you see that the teleportation, the physical toll that it does take on Kurt. You see them both sucking wind, you see him sweating, but watching the two of them fight together is just so much fun. And getting to see him wield, like, everyone who reads the comics know that, you know, Nightcrawler is an incredible swordsman, incredible fencer, but watching him get to use that third sword with the tail is just so much fun. And yes, the Summers family outing as they are working together to escape while blasting sentinels behind them. Yes, that was a lot of fun. And also, Scott Summers is a dorky dad.
All right, Mike, your thoughts on the action real quick.
I mean, you know, Shannon hit it. I mean, I think what's great with X-Men is we've seen so many X-Men movies. There's the animated series. We've seen so many video games. So when you get to see something you haven't seen before, it's really exciting. And seeing Bamfing from Wolverine's perspective on the inside was pretty great. Also, Morph continues to deliver. Morph going full juggernaut, bitch, was pretty, pretty great. And yeah, like, look, really quickly on Prime Sentinels. Like, in the comics, once somebody became a Prime Sentinel, they were gone. That was it.
I was going to say,
they were a robot.
They killed.
So,
okay.
So they're gone. Now, given the number of people in the world that seem to have been turned into Prime Sentinels, I am curious how much of a take back we're going to get. Like, is Hank going to come up with a cure? Is Cable's technovirus the key to getting them back? Is Trish Tilby going to be able to go out with Beast on a date, or is she gone forever? So I'm curious to see what they're going to do with the Prime Sentinels. But yeah, the action from top to bottom. If my crush on Kurt Wagner wasn't already as high as it could be, this episode would take it over. I don't know what it is about that fuzzy blue elf, but I have had a mad crush on that mutant for my entire life, and it's not going away anytime soon after this episode. And then, just to get to the end really quick and to touch on it, like, then getting to see Magneto.
Let's move into the,
just getting to see Magneto really unleash. And then, you know, all the other cameos of Spidey and Silver Samurai and Omega Red that we got there at the end. But that Magneto kind of takes out all of human infrastructure, like wipes out all power.
Yeah.
Like it's a blackout. It's a global blackout. And he's like, fuck you guys. And then to your point, John, you know, Val Cooper's speech, who I was waiting for her to turn into Mystique. She hasn't.
Yes.
It seems now that she's just a human. But
yeah.
Her whole speech about being on Genosha and all of the feelings that she felt, but the one feeling she didn't feel was surprise, because this is what humanity does. And that whole speech happening as we see Magneto and her coming to that conclusion of Magneto's right, Charles is wrong. Yeah. Like we're never getting, like, look at the Holocaust, look at 9/11, look at Black Lives Matter, look at January 6th, look at college campuses today. Val Cooper's like, this isn't going away. Magneto's right. And then to have Magneto just drop the bomb and then Professor X show up at the end in his comics accurate spacesuit, you're just like, all right, this is this could be a season finale. It was the same thing we said with episode 5.
Yeah.
This could be a season finale. Yeah. And I'd be like, that was a great season finale. And we have two more episodes.
I'm going to get my Magneto is right shirt ready to go, because I was on I lean towards Magneto. I lean towards Thanos. Shannon, your thoughts on this, ending as well. And what do you think it leads to? And did you like it?
I mean, yeah, Yeah, I mean, you know, watching Magneto go to the North Pole, you know, you see like he's in he's in his black jockey shorts. And you know, he has the magnetic sphere. And I was like, oh, I wonder what, and then seeing the, you know, the yellow magnetic trail slowly go down and watching all of these sentinels just drop out of the sky. And yeah, the speech was great as well. The whole idea that the one thing that I didn't feel was surprise, like teeing this up for where it is going to go, because Professor X coming back, he's not going to suddenly side with Magneto. So, you know, he is going to be steadfast in his beliefs. But at this point, most of the mutants are probably on Magneto's side. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the next two episodes play out.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is going to be so much fun because you've got the Charles side, the Magneto side, and then somewhere in the middle is Bastion with his crew. This is going to be a hell of a triangular battle that we're going to get over the next two episodes. And I imagine we're going to swing our allegiances. But in the end, I'm sure Charles and them are going to win. But what I like that the show is doing is it is asking questions of you, the viewer, as you're watching it. It is putting you in these hard places to think about where you land and to see the logic of some of certain sides, at least a little bit of the logic of certain sides, and kind of put that into context for yourself and maybe even adjust your point of view a little bit to have it a full fleshed out point of view on all these angles and all these sides. And I love that overall. Yeah.
And look, I mean, like, spoiler alert, I'm pretty sure the good guys are going to win, but
which ones are the good guys, though?
Well, you know what? That's a really good question. What does it say?
It's all about our perspective.
Let me put it this way. I'm pretty sure Bastion's going to lose. But I think that, you know, they teed up William Stryker in this episode. We saw William Stryker on the news. And we know that Bo DeMeo wrote the next 10 episodes that are going to be season 2 of X-Men 97. Right. And the real question is, no matter who, here's the thing, and I think this is where we're going to land up, and it's going to be a really interesting discussion when we see the finale, which is, no matter who wins, the mutants lose. Like, every human sitting at home who watches this whole thing happen, and the aftermath is going to be either a bunch of humans are going to be healing from Prime Sentinel, or they died because they became Prime Sentinels. Magneto wiped out power for everybody globally.
The
X-Men lied about Professor X in people's minds. And we're going to come out of this going, why would I trust these mutants? And so it's like the mutant dilemma of we're fighting, but we're two steps forward, two steps back. Like, it's going to be really interesting because I feel like no matter what they do, the humans are going to be like, I don't like all this.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I agree with you. Especially when you have the UN undercutting you and you're trying to create peace. That can't help either. All right. Well, there you go. That's our spoiler review of episode 8. We could have gone on for another hour. You guys know there was so much in this episode. Hopefully we hit a lot of the main beats that you all were hoping to hear us talk about. But thank you so much for listening or watching us here on this spoiler review. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, it's @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. Is Scott Summers a dorky dad? Follow Mike Vogel @MKToon and tell him, he is. Scott Summers a dorky dad? Follow Johnny Roke @TheRokeItSays and say you agree with him.
Yeah, totally. Such a dork. Michael, what do we have to tell him?
Speaking of dorks, I had a lovely time talking with my two buddies about this episode today. And here's what you guys can do for us. You can smash that like button below, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page, leave your comments below. What do you think of X-Men 97? Where do you think things are going? What parts of the comic books do you think they're going to be adapting next? Like, where do you think is going on in X-Men 97? Let us know below. If you're listening to us on a podcast, go ahead and leave us some stars and comments so we go up in the rankings and more people can find us. And as always, the best thing you can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. Thank you so much for joining us. And of course, we've got our main show coming up on Friday. And the three of us are hanging out at Disney tomorrow as we're recording this. And so we might have some, you know, we might post some pictures and some videos. So look out for all of that on our social medias. And we'll talk to you next time with another brand new spoiler review episode of X-Men 97 here on the
Geek Buddies.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, But more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.